Welcome back to one of my favorite sports podcasts, Frizz and the Grizz, with your host Trudeau and my guy, Keith Frizzy Frizz.
Hello, welcome back to Frizz and the Grizz. It's your boy Trudeau. Thank you for joining us live Tuesday, April 16th, or next day on podcasts, you know, wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, hook you guys up. Rate, subscribe, review, give us 5 stars. Anything less, you're absolutely just being a hater. Great show for you today. Lots of NBA with the playoffs starting this week. Play-ins are starting tonight. Speaking of play-ins, I don't know if my co-host will be paying attention to the show. He's a big Lakers fan. The game is on right now. I can see his eyes creeping to the left at the screen, but we got D Frizzy Frizz here. What's good, buddy?
What a do, baby. Happy Tuesday. Great week. Great weekend, man. Just... you can see the reflection. So, like, people know I don't typically wear glasses. These are blue light glasses. Essentially, it's because I stare at screens all fucking day. So, like, I got to wear them to prevent, like, my eyes from twitching. But, like, you can see in the reflection, obviously, the screen here. But now, if I look down, you can see the iPad screen. So, yes, I will be paying attention as much as I possibly can to what we're doing. But we got the play-ins going on over here on the left. I need LA to finish the damn thing.
Yeah.
They're up right now, and LeBron was cherry picking a dunk. So, you know, he's prime LeBron right now.
See, I don't know. You're a Lakers fan, so you root for them to lose this game to get the play in next game, so you can play in the Thunder and avoid the Nuggets. Is that the plan?
So I've had this question. This is how you know people want to see, like, when you rep a team for so long, people like to talk shit, right? I've had at least 5 people reach out to me and be like, "Yo, D, so Lakers lose tonight?" I'm like, absolutely fucking not. Like, you don't put the bad juju in the air of purposely losing and then letting the basketball gods like have their way with you because of something like that. Karma's a real thing. Absolutely not. Go out there, try to get the job done. And your boy, Wendy, actually had one of the best points for it out of all of this, where it's like, LA is a team that is fit for the playoffs, right? They also need rest. Meaning you lose this game, guess when you're playing? You're playing on Thursday. Then when you're playing after that, the 21st. Back to back to back, then a 7-game series, right? Compared to you win this game tonight, yeah, it's against Denver. You don't play for another 6 days. Let these boys rest, right? AD had a tight back. LeBron is LeBron at damn near 60 years old. Go into that series fresh, man. Like, I'm not losing on purpose to then hope that Steph Curry doesn't drop 70 on you.
I mean, I was just kidding. I was trying to, like, get you riled up. I didn't realize you were that passionate. You've been heckled that much.
I had so many people reach out to me about this today. Like, my phone didn't stop this morning when people were like, "Yo, does Frizz, the Lakers lose?" I'm like, don't fucking text me this shit, man. Like, don't waste my breath with this.
Not to mention that if they were to lose tonight, they'd be playing either the Kings or the Golden State Warriors, which I believe they have 1 win for the season against those teams combined. I think they beat the Warriors once, and didn't they get swept for the season against the Kings?
I don't know if it was a sweep, but I know that I watched 2 games that they lost. I know they play them 3 times, so I don't know if they won the game that I didn't watch.
You know what it is, D? I talked to you, like, back and forth throughout the week, and it's that time of year where, you know, the ESPN, the Stephen A. Smiths of the world, they only know how to talk football. They don't know how to talk about basketball, so they're just finding any random topic to get people going. And if the topic involves the Lakers, that's like stamp of approval. Put it in the A block.
We talked about it's got to be the Lakers. It's got to be the Cowboys. Yeah. And then I think if they have the ability to sneak in the Yankees, they will.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, other than those teams, if it's like off season, they struggle.
I was
like, that little bit of time frame from when the NBA finals ends to when the NFL starts is like panic. It's when everybody takes their PTO.
Yep.
So everybody is freaking out because they got the worst of the worst of the worst anchors on ESPN trying to talk sports.
Yeah, I was telling D during the week, I'll go to the gym earlier in the day, and they have like a FS1 on the main screen by the treadmills, and their topics du jour this week was literally first block. Now, granted, the NBA playoffs are about to start. You know, it's a big time for the NBA. Their first segment, how much pressure is on Dak Prescott this season. I'm like, bro, what are we doing? It's fucking April. What are we doing? But yeah, we're not about that here. We're going to talk about things that are not only topical, like the NBA. We talk about WNBA, college women's basketball, the Masters. We got you all covered today. So let's. Oh, wait. I do want to issue one apology before I get into the quick hits. I want to apologize for insinuating some things 2 weeks ago with my tinfoil hat about Shohei Ohtani. It looks like my man's clean. It looks like my man's clean.
He's no Pete Rose. Still people think he got a fall guy, but
he's just a dumbass.
He literally had no idea.
Did you see some of the details? Just really quick. If you're not aware, Shohei Ohtani, very famous baseball player, probably the biggest baseball player in the world right now. He got embedded into a betting scandal where his interpreter was betting a fuck ton of money. And when I say a fuck ton, I mean like $15 million in debt gambling. I guess the numbers were over the course of several years, he bet about $200 million and he ended up losing $15 million. Long story short, this idiot literally texted with the bookie and bookie's like, hey, did you see what's going on with like Ohtani and stuff? Like, is everything good? And the dude just goes, yeah, it's all good. It was me though. I was just taking the money. And the feds just got that text from the bookie. Like, bro, this dude's a moron. I don't understand. No,
he's just a clear fall guy, man. Let him be the guy that just takes the hit so that we can watch Ohtani, you know, hit from the left side and throw no hitters if he has to.
All right, let's do the weekly recap. I have a lot of shit this week. I am nervous because I am going to stumble through this, but let's try our best.
Mm-hmm. Let's catch up on some of the sports headlines from the week. It's time for Quick Hits with my boy Trubel.
Earlier in the week, Giannis Antetokounmpo injured in a win versus the Celtics. He's unlikely to play the first round series against the Pacers. In the same game, the Celtics set an NBA record for being the first team ever to not get a single free throw attempt in the game. I cannot believe it. And they still won. They lost the game, actually. Celtics, again, big Celtics day, extending Drew Holiday. NFL news, Dallas Police Department issued an arrest warrant for Rashid Rice. He was the guy driving the car like a dumbass. OJ Simpson died. And the NHL, the Arizona Coyotes are moving to Utah. Masters Week just happened. Scottie Scheffler, fourth win in a row, finished with a net 11 under par to win the Masters. The good and the bad. Tiger Woods making the cut for 24 consecutive tournaments. The bad. Well, he made the cut minus one. He finished the tournament plus 16, a complete meltdown in the last two rounds. WNBA draft happened last night with Caitlin Clark headlining at number one. A ton of good talent after that. And finally, English footy, a little English football. The club owned by Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds, Wrexham FC. They were promoted last year from the National League to League Two. This year, guess what? Promoted again to League Numero Uno, and that's your update. All right, wow. D, jump into it.
I mean, there's a whole lot to go over. One of the bigger things, especially because of it being the Masters weekend, is how happy everybody was when Tiger Woods made the cut, and then to finish the worst round of golf he'd ever finished in his entire career at plus 16.
Yuck.
Tough. One of my good buddies was like, yeah, man, he's going to look good until the Bengay wears off. And essentially, that's exactly what happened. Like Saturday and Sunday, he just looked off. He looked like us, right? Like when we would go out there and we would golf. But a big shout to the winner, Scottie Scheffler, just took the lead in on day two. He didn't look back. And from what I was able to watch, a lot of gambling is involved with this stuff for me now, for me to watch these types of sports. But when I was watching like recaps where on day four, I was putting together some furniture upstairs. They were talking about, they were like, today's the prime day for Scheffler. If he goes up two strokes, he's not going to look back. And that's exactly what happened, where he got two birdies early and everybody was just playing catch up. He was up plus four. He was up four strokes essentially the entire weekend. So a great way to get a second Masters jacket, seventh youngest to win back to back. What's up?
No, yeah, he has two. I was going to say, the craziest thing is he's only 27.
That's what I'm saying. He's the seventh youngest. Random stat that you learn when you're watching random sports, which is great. But yeah, he's the seventh youngest to win back-to-back Masters in the history. So incredible. Good for him.
The thing with Tiger Woods is like, obviously he can still golf. He was very good through the first two rounds. But at this age with, you know, that car accident, well, two car accidents that is, and just the state of his body, man, his back is just a complete mess. And you know, people underestimate how much of a physical toll it is walking the golf course for 72 holes. You're shaking me off.
No.
What at that age? At that age with those problems? Okay. Let me just finish.
If you want to involve it being like an age thing, sure. But these 17-year-old turning pros, no.
At nearly 50 with back, like his back have been fused in the back after like that terrible in the past with, you know, after that terrible accident. It just takes a toll on him. I guarantee you, if he could take a golf cart the entire tournament and not walk it, you would see a much different Tiger.
I always wonder why they don't do that.
I just think it's one of those things where
it's like baseball, they'll never change certain things.
Yes, or like, yeah, because they don't want to influence, like, they have records in the past and that you figure if you add the golf carts, it's an advantage to the newer players. I don't know.
Steph Curry shoots 23s a game.
Yeah.
Because of the 3-point line. Like, it's called evolution. I don't want to go down the road. Yeah, that's fine. Golf. I love golf, whether it be playing it. I actually do enjoy playing it. And no lie, I do enjoy watching it, but it's got to be like, it has to be day 3 or 4. First two, I'm like, ugh, this is, anybody could just, like, one dude was out there, he went up early, and then, like, he finished, like, plus 7. I was like, ugh. Guess the little stress comes in on day 3. But you also mentioned, obviously, the WNBA. Big shouts to Caitlin Clark getting drafted #1 overall. Big topic of discussion was, like, the fits that the females were wearing and the presentation of the draft. They did a really good job of making it, like, as close to how the NFL draft is when it comes to pre and post interviews, when it comes to, like, highlight reels leading up to it, interviewing people's families, like, getting their hometowns involved. WNBA is on the way up, and, like, they have the superstar talent to do that from this class. They're not saying that, like, Asia Wilson, and I always get homegirl's name from the Vegas Aces. I always forget her. I can't remember what her name is. But there's three stars that, you know, Candace Parker plays there, but there's three stars in Vegas. And I don't think, even with how good they are talented wise, that they touch the sun as to where Caitlin Clark is bringing into the WNBA. And it's not just Caitlin Clark. It's obviously Cameron Brink, who is out of Stanford. She got drafted by the Sparks. So, you know, she's replacing, like, the Teresa Witherspoon, the Lisa Leslies, the Candace Parkers back in the day. Superstar that brings the championship potentially to LA. People love that, obviously. You got Camila Cardoso, who is teaming up with Angel Reese. Like, two of the top bigs in college basketball are on the same team in Chicago. Oh, and then, by the way, Aliyah Edwards, UConn, you know, national champion a couple of years ago, she got drafted in the top 5 as well. So, like, great, great talent coming out of the top 7. I'm looking forward to when the season starts to see where everybody's going to land amongst the, I would say, like, the hierarchy of the WNBA.
Nice. The only thing that was left untouched that I find interesting, and I'll segue to our next segment with it, is the Giannis injury. And I think that could cause some very, very interesting scenarios in the next round. So, yeah, most probable first round upsets, obviously.
I think we're on the same page with this one.
Yeah, we have most of, at least half the NBA playoff games set in stone. We're still waiting on the play-ins to finish up, and there could be some upsets out of that. But we're going to talk more about what we know now and what we see as a probable upset. I didn't touch the 4-5 matchups, because to me, those matchups are so close, like, as far as the talent. I mean, we're talking one seed here that a 5 beating a 4 is not really a huge deal. You know, one thing that I'm really looking forward to watching is the Pacers play the Bucks. Not only because, A, we see Giannis is out for at least the first couple games of that series, but B, even with Giannis playing, the Pacers have had the Bucks number this year. I believe it's a 3-1 split or something like that, and heavily in favor of the Pacers. They, for some reason, the Pacers match up really well with the Bucks. I'm looking at this matchup, D. I think of all the matchups in the playoffs, the Bucks are the most vulnerable to an early exit. And then, let's just face it, Doc Rivers is not the coach you look at and think playoff fortitude.
So there's a whole lot going on in Milwaukee, and who I don't want to say feel bad for, but just, like, one of those, I guess you got out at the right times, Adrian Griffin. I think they did him dirty with the whole this started at the beginning of the season when they just didn't trust him, or like, you know, the defense wasn't playing the way that they wanted it to play. They started 30-13. They were damn near 20 games over 500 in the East, battling with Boston. And then Doc Rivers came in, who we know has, I think, one of the most overrated track records. He might be a good coach, but I think he has one of the most overrated track records in the NBA. Yeah, he fell into a championship while he had KG, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen. But like, since he's been there, they're 17-19. They dropped, obviously, all from a 1-2 seed to down to like a 5-6. Not good, obviously. Giannis's injury is huge, which is the main reason why I don't think that they get through Indiana. More importantly, Dame is going through some stuff where, personally wise, like, I've never experienced this, but like, he's going through something involving his family, in which like, that's going to mentally affect how you play on the court. And you have Indiana, who's coming in 100% healthy. Only player that they're missing is Benedict Mathurin, which they haven't had him for a while, and they're still playing pretty decent without him. We know how good Miles Turner is. We obviously know how good their point guard is, like, when it comes to Tyrese Halliburton. Like, they have the skill to beat Milwaukee even healthy, let alone with these issues.
And do you've left off a name. Do you remember who they traded for midseason?
Oh,
Pascal Siakam is also a Pacer. Yep, I forgot
about. He's so lost in the sauce with that. He's probably been really good, but he was the star in Toronto that I forget that he's in Indiana.
So one very interesting thing with the Indiana Pacers is they started the season, and as you know, this kind of happens every year where there's like one or two teams every year where we look at them, their offensive efficiency, and it's like, this is the greatest offense of all time, just because of the way the NBA is changing. This was one of the teams that started off this year with the highest offensive rating of all time. You know, it's gone down a little bit as the season's progressed, as all offense, but first half of the season, best offensive rating of all time, one of the worst defenses in the league. I think it was them and the Wizards at the very bottom as far as defensive rating. Since the All-Star break and since acquiring Pascal Siakam, yes, that offense has tailed off a little bit. They're still top five offensive efficiency or offensive rating, excuse me. That defense has been trending upwards, and now they're at the point where their defense since the All-Star break has been middle of the pack. And if you have one of the greatest offenses of all time statistically in a middle of the pack defense, you are a very, very dangerous team. Mm-hmm. And that's also with Tyrese Halliburton playing through injury for about a month straight, just trying to get the games recorded to make all NBA. We're now seeing a Tyrese Halliburton that's coming back into form. This team is extremely dangerous. And on the flip side, I look at the Bucks. I'm a Magic fan. I watched the last game of the season because it was very important to my team. They played the Milwaukee Bucks, who had something to play for. That Bucks team looked awful, absolutely awful. I know having Giannis back eventually would help, and I don't know if he will come back, but without Giannis right now, it's a team that lacks identity. They made their bread and butter as a defensive first team that could grind you down with Giannis in the playoffs in tough matchups. Since trading for Dame Lillard and getting rid of Jrue Holiday, the defense has gone considerably downhill with a very lack of perimeter defenders. I think it's a team that lacks identity. Their superstars missing, and they're playing a team that has had their number all year. And then they're also playing a team that's trending upwards. This matchup between the 3-6 has all the writing for an upset. Like, the writing is on the wall.
It's easily, and it just starts with Giannis being hurt, right? Even if he were playing, him at 70% or 80%, his skill set is so just domination, like, down the paint, that like he can't play injured, right? Like, he can't explode, he can't jump, he can't dunk if he doesn't have the ability to do that because of a knee. Right, it was his knee, right? I believe it was like a twisted knee.
It was his calf. Crazy. It was a calf. It was the same. Okay. It was the same calf injury that KD suffered in the playoffs that he came back for, and then eventually in the finals, his Achilles popped, which is why there's concern with rushing Giannis back and potentially having a setback.
This might be, and I know we talked about it. I said at the beginning of the season that it was a rental, but I this may be the unraveling. I don't care if he re-signed or not. This may be the unraveling of the Milwaukee Bucks as we know it, in which Giannis may not want to stay, right? Like if Dame is out because like he just can't handle it and he didn't really want to be in Milwaukee to, you know, to start. In the start, he wanted to be either in New York or he wanted to be down in Miami. And then they go out and lose, you know, 4-1, 4-2 wow. to, you know, undervalued team in Indiana. This could be the coming of the senses for them to get rid of Dame, get rid of Middleton and restart. And Giannis isn't going to want to be there for that, especially coming off of an injury.
Now, let me ask you this. So we know that the Milwaukee Bucks have home court, so they'll host the first two playoff games in the series. We don't know when Giannis will be coming back. All that being said, I have the DraftKings odds in front of me for who will win the playoff series. What do you think those odds are right now?
It still has Milwaukee winning. Really?
It is a pick'em. Minus 110 Milwaukee, minus 110 Indiana. It's a pick'em series now.
You're going to have to fill me in on what pick'em means. I'm still new to the betting game. What does that even mean?
That means there's no favorite. It's okay. A dead heat.
You think is going to win.
Yes, so there's no betting favorite. I don't know, man. This is going to be a super fun series. And there is bad blood, too. If you remember back to, it was either December or January this year when there was a 50-point game or something like that from Giannis or Dame Lillard, and Tyrese Halliburton took the game ball or the Indiana Pacers official took the game ball and Giannis went charging back in the locker room to receive game ball. Yeah, these teams do not like each other. It's two cities very close in proximity. They have bad blood in the regular season, and I just cannot wait. I do think this is going to be at least a game 6 or 7 series, and I'm leaning towards Indiana on this one.
I'm leaning Indiana just because of Tyrese Halliburton and how good he actually is, especially we saw he elevated the team during the in-season tournament, obviously, earlier this season. But no Giannis, I just don't think Dame is going to be able to carry the team. We saw what he tried to do out in Portland for 10 years, and unfortunately he couldn't do it. This team has less talent than what he had out in Portland, especially when he had, you know, CJ McCollum, who was a great wing, great two guard. Middleton is a shell of himself. Love a Bobby Portis, but he can't be the star of the team, unfortunately. And if he is, then yeah, your team's going to be in some trouble.
Do you have any other? So we talked about, for us both, Indiana is the most probable team to pull off an upset. I have one more. If this happens, it's a play-in one that's not in set in stone yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one that is interesting, there's two play-in ones. One that people would be the trendy pick is, well, if Philly wins and takes care of business tomorrow, people would be very apt to say that is a potential upset with Philly over New York Knicks. I think it's possible. I don't know what Joel is going to look like coming out tomorrow. He did aggravate his knee versus the Magic. But hear me out. What's the score of the Lakers game right now?
They're up 10, almost going into halftime.
All right. Well, for some reason, the Pelicans can find a way to pull this thing off. I do think
you're basing off of them not only winning this game but getting to coming back.
No.
But,
I'm not done. I'm saying I think the Chet You Betcha Oklahoma City Thunder team is vulnerable because hear me out. Their biggest weakness all year has been size. They are a very small team. Chet is a tall man. He is not a big man. The rest of their players are on the shorter end. Their wings are about 6'5 and below. I would take a venture to guess that their second biggest player outside of Chet would be wing Jalen Williams or SGA. So a team with size and physicality do pose a tough matchup for them. I'm looking at the Lakers or maybe even the Pelicans if they do slide to 8. Those two teams do have some size, and I would be worried if I were a Oklahoma City Thunder fan, especially with the Lakers, because listen, all year the Lakers have had the Thunder's number.
I thought you were going to make another point to that.
No. I ran out of steam. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. I don't see. I mean, LA won't be matched up with them if they win this game. It's going to be Denver. What I do think a lot of people are forgetting is how young and dumb the 2012 OKC Thunder were. That team went to the NBA Finals. Granted, I know they had Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook, but they also have the youngest team to make a one seed, very similar to that team that went deep. They have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who was a potential MVP candidate. They have Chet Holmgren, who is a potential defensive player of the year, essentially pseudo rookie of the year, second year, an incredibly talented big. They have the kid that got in trouble.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the dude that got in trouble for the video that was online.
Are you talking about Giddey with the little
girls? Yes, Josh Giddey. Yeah. They had Josh Giddey. And then they have another younger player, Jalen Williams. That core,
so
those four players being young and dumb, fast in the playoffs, people think just because they're inexperienced and they have to hit the wall that they're not going to go deep into the playoffs. They hit that last year. Last year was their, oh, damn, like this is the playoffs. And now this is the year that they could make a run to the Western Conference Finals.
So my argument is not against the inexperience. I think they're immensely talented. My issue with the Thunder, again, is that they do lack size. And a team that wants to play slow and physical and as a bigger team like the Lakers, like the Minnesota Timberwolves, those teams pose an especially big problem for the Thunder. So if for some reason the Lakers were to lose tonight, I do think that they would have a pretty good matchup advantage against the Thunder. That's just my personal opinion on it.
Yeah, I would, if they lost, I'm not playing the game of the Lakers need to lose. They're up 10, it's halftime. If they lose, then yes, I would only say the advantage, because this happened to the Lakers in 2012. They came up against the younger OKC Thunder and they got blitzed 4-1, right? And against Westbrook and Durant and all them. This team, older, obviously, very similar to the 2012 Lakers that were past their prime. They just won the finals 2 years prior. They got a LeBron James versus the Kobe Bryant. The only advantage I would give LA versus OKC is the mind of LeBron James. Everything else is favored by OKC. Yes, 100%.
Anthony Davis poses some extreme problems for the team.
I am always going to be on the AD train, right? Always will be. His health in the later ends of the season is the issue. Man had back tightness 2 days ago. Yeah, he's going up against Larry Nance and Zion right now. It's not really all that bigger size. He's just as big as them, if not bigger. Chet Holmgren is gonna go after him, and he's gonna make him move. He's gonna make him have to move fast because Holmgren can run. So, like, yes, I understand that he's a better player, but I think Holmgren causes more of an issue than a Zion or Larry Nance Jr.
So you will see. I mean, I don't think at this point it doesn't look the Lakers will fall to the 8th seed, which God help them, man. That Denver Nuggets team is their kryptonite. We'll see, though. I mean, anything can happen. You know, they had the most competitive sweep of all time last year against the Nuggets. So we'll see.
Why you gotta say it like that, bro? Like, I understand that it was like a one possession game every single game, but you ain't got to say it like it was a competitive sweep.
It was just a very competitive sweep.
It was four-oh. Doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile. Winning's winning.
To be fair, I think they lost three games all playoffs, the Nuggets. So I'm not gonna hold anything against the Lakers for that. That was a fucking juggernaut. Let's transition then into some NBA awards. I just figured we can touch back. We talked awards way earlier in the season, probably like 2 months in. You know, the regular season's over. Awards have been, the ballots have been turned into the league. We'll find out in the next couple of days some of the awards, and then MVPs later on down the line. I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time on each award, maybe just like a minute or two, just chit-chatting each one up. Do you want to start with the big one or the littler ones, the smaller ones?
Wherever way you want to go.
We'll start with the most obvious ones. Rookie of the year, I think it's going to be a no-brainer. I would be surprised if it wasn't unanimous. Victor Wembanyama, earlier in the season, it looked like Chet had this thing won, and Victor has become otherworldly to the fact that he is probably the second front-runner for defensive player of the year. The guy is everything we've been told, and then some. I believed all the hype, and it still vastly overblew my expectations.
So I was 100% against the whole Victor Wembanyama. All it took was one video of like a European League game where home dude got the ball in the post, backed Wemby down three times, turned around and dunked on him. I was like, he can't do that shit. He's not built for the NBA. Boy, going to be weak. Boy, going to be soft. And now I'm seeing a 7'7" kid do step back threes at the top of the key against Jokic when Jokic and the Denver Nuggets are trying to get the one seed. Conducting a 20-point comeback and being the anchor of the 20-point comeback on both the offensive and defensive side. Yeah, he made me a believer. I ate my words. I ate my crow. I apologize for saying that. I didn't think you could hand over the key. I was more on the side of history. I don't know how many 17, 18, 19-year-olds you could just hand over the keys to an organization and say, yeah, he's the guy. But we're seeing Brandon Miller in Charlotte be, all right.
He was good.
Yeah, I didn't say bad. He's just being, all right. Seeing Amen Thompson, the Thompson brothers in Detroit and Houston being, all right. Scoot Henderson, well, the tail is out there for him. Wemby is on another fucking level. Like, what he's done has been ridiculous. So, big shouts to him. I think this one is an easy win. I know it was on Chet, you bet your side for a good portion of the season. But no, this is going to be it's got to be unanimous. There's no way anybody else votes for anyone else besides him.
Yeah, I do think some of the other names that you threw out there deserve some praise, because I feel like in general this has been a very good rookie class, and I guess I'm throwing Chet in there even though he was drafted last year. It seems like a lot of these guys towards the top look like they have a bright future. Like you mentioned,
Okay. Yeah,
you mentioned Brandon Miller. Like he had a tough start to the season, but over the second half, he was one of the more efficient rookies, and he's been really good for the Charlotte Hornets. You know, this draft class reminds me a lot of the Scotty Barnes draft class, when it was like Cade Cunningham, Scotty Barnes, and Jalen Suggs didn't reach that high potential. Jalen Green, but as far as like the top guys being pretty good and not looking like complete bust, maybe except for a Scoot. But I'm gonna hold out on Scoot. I'm gonna hold out
Portland.
But yeah, with nothing. It reminds me a lot of that draft class, except for there's like a super uper duper star at the top of Victor.
Mm-hmm.
Coach of the year, I think that it's gonna pretty easily go to Mark Daigneault, Oklahoma City Thunder coach. You just mentioned earlier it's one of the younger teams in the NBA, and I think during the March Madness tournament we had fun with it, saying that team was younger than what March Madness team was it?
Was it UConn?
It might have been UConn. Like
They were younger than North Carolina.
Okay, they were younger than North Carolina, who was
not a 27-year-old dude.
But to have Mark Daigneault, lead this team of young players, they were a play-in team last year. They were a play-in last year, right? Yeah. To the number one seed, super impressive. He's obviously a very good tactician coach. I want to give shout-outs to a couple other guys. Joe Mazzulla, I know he doesn't get his flowers, but like this Celtics team is unbelievable. He obviously has a great mind for offense and defense as well. Jamal Mosley from the Magic, like huge leap in growth. And then Chris Finch with the Timberwolves. I know they were a laughingstock last year. They lost Towns. They managed to keep the ship going and finish with a three seed.
You didn't give a shout to Mr. One Tom Thibodeau.
That's good.
For usually running his teams into the dirt. Not gonna lie. Like He does, but like, this New York team, because half of them are from Villanova, like at least they're a little bit younger. But the only person that he hurt was Julius Randle. That was it.
Can I say something? I want to give shouts to one Josh Hart, because this man is going to die. Someone needs to save this man, because Tibbs is playing him. I don't know if it's possible, but Tibbs is playing him 85 minutes a game. I think
they went a triple overtime game and he played every single minute of it. It's like, brother, just take a break. Like
get the man some water.
I'm saying he needs the oxygen tank. Like he's playing football on the sideline. Like my goodness. But yeah, I don't think he gets, a shit ton of votes or anything like that, but some recognition to what New York was able to do, because in the offseason, oh my goodness, the amount of backlash that people were giving New York for signing Jalen Brunson, for the money that they did, from coming out of, you know, Luka's shadow in Dallas. They were like, he can't lead a team.
He's fantastic.
And lo and behold, this dude is otherworldly. So big shouts to, you know, to Tibbs for what he was able to do. I think it does go to Mark. I put some bread down on there being voters that just switch it up and give it to Mazzulla. But like, I didn't combo it with anything. It was just one of those, like, he's got the best team in the NBA, and who knows if, like, they just don't give it to him because of that. We've seen uglier things happen.
So voting. There is a Reddit post that they do every year, and someone meticulously goes through all the podcasts and people will collaborate. And typically, like, after the voters put their votes and they can disclose it, like, after the voting's closed. So, you know, JJ Redick will go on his podcast and say who he voted for. So this guy puts a spreadsheet together of all the votes. There's only about 14 votes, voters, you know, in. But, you know, you mentioned Tom Thibodeau. He has, to this point, 1 second place vote, 1 third place vote. Your guy Joe Mazzulla has 1 first place vote, 1 second place vote. But overwhelmingly, the voters are leaning Mark Daigneault. He has 8 first place votes. And one third place vote. Who's the jackass giving him the third place vote?
I'm giving Shagnault the third place vote.
Yeah, it was Rick Bruchar. Is that the guy FS1? I have no idea. Mm-mm. Who's the black guy in FS1?
Bruchard.
That's a different Bruchard.
Yeah, right? It's not Rick.
Okay, I don't know what this guy should lose his vote. I don't know if you have an interest in six man. It looks like Naz Reid's going to win it.
Should be Naz Reid. We talked about that. Yeah. There were other people that were like in the running for it, but I said it like a couple of weeks ago that he should most likely win.
I don't know if you have any disagreement with this. You know, defensive player of the year, I think it's pretty obvious it's going to go to Rudy Gobert. But I will give you this. So right now, of the votes, we know there are 13 votes that we know of. 10 first place votes went to Rudy Gobert. 3 voters gave a first place vote to Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like that there's a stigma on because he's a rookie, he may not win it. I understand that Rudy Gobert is on the number one of the top rate. I don't know if they're number one anymore.
They are.
Okay, midway through the season, I remember they were. But I understand they're on the number one. He's on the number one defense, helping to anchor that number one defense. But Wemby's got more blocks, more deflections, more steals, more defensive presence than Gobert. And I know that his team isn't as good, but defensive player of the year isn't a team award. Like, it should just go to whoever is the best defensive player. And hands down, statistic-wise, and the way that he changes the game, I would think that Wembanyama would be a little bit higher for winning that award.
It's hard to give it to a guy who's on a team that has like 3 wins. And that overall, the team defense is not very good. I will say this though, like, in a vacuum, Victor Wembanyama might be a more impactful defensive player because, unlike Rudy, he does have the ability to generate steals. He's a good stonk guy, blocks and steals. And his footwork's pretty good for a big man. Like, if you catch him out of position, he can recover pretty well. You know what? I think this might be the last time Rudy wins this award because the next 15 years is going to be Victor Wembanyama, Defensive Player of the Year, barring an injury.
I'll fucking rename it now.
The last two really quick. Most Improved Player, which is something that I have a lot riding on as far as my betting lines go. We saw that the betting odds went super far in favor of Tyrese Maxey. It was like minus 1,200 towards the end of betting before they closed it. It looks like it's going to be a toss-up. It looks like it's more like 50-50. It's really hard with this award because Most Improved, it's very vague, so people can interpret it the way they want. I saw a lot of love on podcasts for Jalen Williams of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I actually saw one first-place vote go to Jalen Brunson, which was interesting, which I can see it as far as his ascendance to superstardom. This is coming down to Tyrese Maxey and Kobe White. I'm riding with Tyrese Maxey, but I could absolutely see the case for Kobe White. He was a guy who was fringe rotational at one point. It looked like he was going to fall out of the league, and he's become a very useful player. Not a superstar player. I wouldn't say he's become a great player, but like a very good player that would be a good number 4 on like a high level championship team.
He finished the season 19-5-5, shooting 38% from three at the point guard position. I think those are tremendous numbers for people that are not a name point guard, right? Like the Lucas, the Shays, like those guys that are out, and Edwards, if you technically call him a point, I know he's like a PGSG, but like those guys that are putting up 30 points per game. Coby White is more of a two-way point guard. He might not get you 10-15 assists per game. He might not get you 30-40 points per game, but he's going to play defense on the opposing, because he came in as a defender. He's going to play defense on the opposing point guard, and he's going to get you a bucket for about 20-25 per game. So, yeah, I'm not going to say that he automatically wins that award, but like I'm a big fan of seeing him out there, especially with, you know, how he came into the league, where he was, you know, the guy that just talked about his boy that got drafted. I can't even remember what his teammates, because they went to North Carolina. There's a video of just like, yo, bro, he got drafted. Like, that's all people knew about him was just that. And he was like off the bench. So to see him be a starter and help get this team to the play-in, good job for him over the past 82.
Yeah, the Tyrese Maxey thing, like, he obviously ascended to a great level. Like, he was always a very good player. He's ascended to great. I think he has something like 5 or 6 40-point games. Like, the ceiling's super high. I think with Maxey, the problem was everyone thought, oh, when Embiid goes out, like, he's going to become this even bigger star. Like, he's going to have his odds of winning this award improve even more. But he seems like a guy who, at least with the structure of the 76ers, it can't just be him, right? He's a fast, smaller point guard. He's not going to carry the load. When you're pairing him with Embiid, he is an absolute superstar. But
52 a couple nights ago.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how this one turns out. It looks like it's going to be a nail biter. And then the last award, I don't think there's a lot of mystery behind it. Well, it is the biggest award of them. MVP Nikola Jokic, looking at the known voters right now, the spread is for first place votes, Nikola Jokic 15, SGA 2, and Luka 1. So Jokic is going to run away with this thing, and deservedly so. He finished in the top like 1 or 2 for all the advanced metrics, the standard metrics, rebounds, assist, points. I think he finished in like the top 7 of all of those categories. The guy is absolutely fantastic. And it's unfortunate for people like Luka, which if there wasn't a Jokic in the world, Luka would be a surefire MVP this year.
34-9-10. Just ridiculously stupid numbers there. And efficient too,
yeah,
compared to, we all know, you know, the Russi triple-double MVP season that he had, right? Like, that was impressive, obviously. But like, Luka is carrying. He is carrying the Denver the Dallas Mavericks. And I think we might have mentioned it last year. A quiet Kyrie is a good Kyrie. We're not hearing flat earth talk. We're not hearing fucking Chicago riot talks. We're not hearing underpaid. No. Kyrie has been really quiet. I think the most that we heard about him was fasting during Ramadan. Like, okay, do that. There's nothing wrong with, you know, preaching your religious beliefs and whatnot. But like, he wasn't spewing off some Jewish stuff. Like, he just went down a fucking rabbit hole of dumb shit last year, and it derailed the team. And this year, they just did what they need to do for a lot of people. They just stopped putting the microphone in front of him. And he was like, just go out there and hoop, please. Jason Kidd has done a tremendous job with keeping this team, I would say, afloat for the right time. And now's the time for them to cash out on it. 15-32 on the season, five seed. I think they're in a good spot if they stay healthy to make a potential run. Luka's one of those players, you get hot, you just ride that wave.
Well, they talk about upsets. I mean, I didn't consider 5-4. I think they have the edge over the Clippers with Kawhi not being out or not being
there. It's all this.
And then
it's a mental thing with Paul George.
Their path after that, if they get past the Clippers, would be the Thunder, which, again, I'm not convinced of the Thunder as a playoff, as a conference finals team. We could see the Mavs in the conference finals.
Yes. Luka's been there before. The, like, people forget about this, but Luka was a game away from when I think they went to seven in the bubble with the Lakers. Like they or they were seven or six. I don't want to misspeak, but they weren't too far off. And Luka went on one of them historic runs. We all remember the whole Booker thing, like the lean over, fucking one of the greatest memes of all time of like, yo, man, or everybody acting tough when they're up, right? Like the fucking Ivan Drago that came out of him. So like if he goes on one of those runs, it is going to be ridiculously hard to stop him. Like he can drop 70 if he wants to. We saw him do it this season. Just a buzzsaw in Dallas. And was it Blake Lively? No, Blake Lively's the actor. What's the
Derek Lively the second.
Derek Lively, sorry. Blake Lively is the actor from The Town. Derek Lively has been an incredible draft pick. The size that they needed is exactly what they got from him.
Well, Daniel Gafford too has been a huge help for them.
Trade, yeah.
Really quick before we get to the Is That Anything segment, you know, I just wanted, since we just went through a whole NBA season, we talked decent amount of Lakers, not really any Magic. I wanted us to at least get some time to talk about how we felt about our teams this season. Since you just went on the spew about Blake Lively, I'll go first with the Magic. If you told me at the beginning of the season, my expectations was we're a rebuilding team. I would like to see us in the play-in, competing for a play-in spot. If you told me the Orlando Magic would finish with the 5 seed in the beginning of the season, I would be ecstatic. Unfortunately, I am a little disappointed, only because last 2 weeks of the season, this team had the opportunity to host a playoff game, and they lost 3 of their last 4 in embarrassing fashions. And I do feel a little disappointed that they couldn't, you know, finish this thing out strong. The wheels kind of fell off. But as far as the future, do I expect us to beat the Cavs? Maybe, but I don't think it's going to happen. I saw huge improvements from guys like Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. And I really like this young core. I think this team is gritty. They play hell of defense. They fight like hell. They're kind of like Knicks-esque in that way. And they're going to be a problem in the future for the East. This team's not going anywhere, and they have like $25, $30 million worth of cap space in this offseason, so it should be interesting.
I like how they finished, essentially with the record-wise, not the tail end of the season.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to check real quick.
Oh, real quick. Can I just throw something out there?
Yep.
People don't know this guy that much because he was injured for like 2 years. They probably know him best for the guy who stood up when everyone took a knee in the bubble. But if you have not watched Orlando Magic basketball, you need to watch Jonathan Isaac play defense, because he is a fucking terror. Like, he might be, and I'm not being hyperbolic, the best defensive player in the league. His problem is he's
a very athletic defensive player. We'll say that
he's very rangy, and he just finds ways to just get into every passing lane, every shot attempt. He is a nightmare for offensive players. The only problem is they use kid gloves on him because, again, his knees are as good as an 80-year-old, and he plays like 20 minutes a game because like they don't want to wear him down. But that team, man, with him and Suggs, like the defense is just out of this world.
I think you guys have a good shot in the next year, maybe two, to make some noise. Only problem is just, you know, I've said this multiple times. Unfortunately, 2026 is going to be the last year that you have Paolo Banchero. So you better win while you have the window, because he's unfortunately going to be a Los Angeles Laker. So it's going to be a great segue for me to talk about how the Lakers actually finished this season.
Have you watched Paolo play?
No, I don't watch Magic game. I just know that he made the All-Star game. I'll take that. He'll possibly make a second team All-NBA, maybe third team. You don't think he'll make third team?
I don't think he'll make an All-NBA team. I want to say his play style, not to say it's the same level, but he reminds me his play style of a young LeBron. He's that type of player.
I don't mind the comparison for that. I'll take anybody that's 6'8", 240 pounds, and athletically freakish athlete.
Speaking of LeBron, go to the Lakers. Go ahead.
Yes. So Lakers, I'm not going to use the disappoint word. I will say I'm okay with their season, meaning it's a replica of what happened last year. And last year they made it to the NBA, to the Western Conference Finals, meaning just stay healthy. So most games that Anthony Davis has played in the past four seasons with LA. So he did his part, which was play over 65 games. I'll give him that credit. They finished 47-35. I think I said they were going to win 54. So only seven games off. I know it's only, but it's the West, very strong conference. Essentially three games separating the 3-9 seed, right? So like it's a very competitive side. Post All-Star game, this is exactly what they did last year, 17-9. They're just setting themselves up. Granted, I hate that they're in the play-in, but they're setting themselves up for just give us a seven-game series against anybody. And we have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and you don't. Only team that's going to give them probably the most trouble is the matchup that they'll most likely get in the first round, and it's the Denver Nuggets. So we'll see how that goes. But AD's health, really good. LeBron at 70. Really good season. Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura, and D'Angelo Russell all played great this year. They all increased their productivity from last season. So I'm not mad at the season. It's just I'm okay with where they're at, knowing that all their eggs are in one basket because there's no future for the Lakers. So like the time to win is now. So that's where you just have to capitalize off of it.
Yeah, it's tough. All things considered, it was an okay season. You know, yeah. I totally agree with you. It's the West is just a fucking juggernaut, and what are you gonna do? Let's get into one of my favorite segments that we haven't done in ages. Is that anything? I went a little crazy, D, with this. Is that anything? I have a shit ton of stats. So basically, if you're new to the proceedings, and I haven't done this in a long time, but is that anything? Is usually random stats, and you know, D's going to listen to the stats and say, can you take some meaning from it? Is this anything, or is it just nonsense? I'm going to give you a little spoiler alert. A lot of these stats are actually pretty meaningful. There's only like one or two that I think could be nonsense, but I found some really interesting nuggets. It's kind of like a sample size of the whole season, so it's an encompassment of all the seasons, and let's get right into it.
As the saying goes, numbers never lie. Let's dive into the statistics and ask the question, is this anything?
And just to preface this, I have, I think, five or six of these, so let's try to be brief about each one, okay? First one, since the year 2000, two of the top four teams to have their win percentage increase from season to season were this year. So basically, all the teams from the year 2000, you look 1 year back and you compare their win percentage from last year to this year. And we looked at who had the biggest increases in win percentage, so teams that had the biggest growth. Of the top four biggest growths, two of them happened this year. Do you have any guesses of what those two teams are, who those teams are?
OKC.
I don't. Oh, do I am I wrong?
We're talking NBA, right?
Yes.
I don't think of who's at the top of the conferences.
Or think of teams that were not so good last year that are good this year.
Oh, the Rockets. All right, go ahead. I don't want to keep getting the buzzer.
The Orlando Magic.
Okay.
And the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Ooh.
Two of the biggest growths.
Weren't they?
They were a play-in team last year, and now they are sitting at the top of the West. The Orlando Magic, I think they had 32 wins last year, and they're up to 47 or 48 wins.
Okay.
So yeah, is that anything?
Yes. It shows that the future is bright. Oh, you want to give the sounder for that one?
Okay. No, you can.
Yeah. I would say that the future is bright for both of those teams. I know I joke around with the Paolo Banchero thing, but in a conference for the East, I think it's wide open for anybody to go ahead and take. Celtics are at the top, obviously. They have the best talent in the league. But that doesn't mean that 2-8 can't upset. All it takes is one series. All it takes is an injury. Something doesn't roll your way. So they could be one of those teams that like start to stranglehold the Eastern Conference. I could see that, especially with like what the Knicks are doing. Who can't replicate that out of Orlando, obviously? And for Minnesota, they got one of them ones. His name is Anthony Edwards. Like, yes, the Western Conference is going to have to deal with Michael Jordan at 6'4" for a very long time. He plays such a smooth game. It's not just above the rim. His mid-range is very Kevin Durant type, where people think that it's a lost art. Nope, catch people off guard when you hit that mid-range. It's just going to open it up in the paint or from the three-point line, which we saw him shoot much better this season.
I thought, just really quick to punk through this, I thought the interesting thing for Orlando is their only off-season additions as far as actual playing time is concerned. Joe Ingles, Anthony Black, the rookie. So they took this leap with just the internal players they had last year. So that's a lot of growth and development. Here's a good one for you. I have net rating improvements since the All-Star game. The top four, three of the top four teams that had the biggest growth in net rating. So net rating is your offensive points per game versus your defensive points per game. Number two, I think, were the Spurs. They get disqualified because they were just god awful before the All-Star game. Number one, Denver. They went from a 3.3 to a 9.8. So they took a 6-point net rating jump after the All-Star break. Dallas, number three, 1.3 to 3.7. Okay, here's a crazy one. Number four, the Boston Celtics were the fourth biggest improvement in net rating since the All-Star break. They went from 10.8 to 14.6 post-All-Star break. They were already a juggernaut pre-All-Star break, and they became an even more juggernaut. For some context, the 97-96 Bulls was an 11.7 net rating. The Celtics were 14.6 in the second half of the season. A lot of numbers just threw at you. Is this anything?
Yes. It shows that those are the teams that you have to worry about come playoff time. It is the Nuggets, it is the Mavs, and it is the Celtics. Yes. It's literally what we just talked about last segment. Those three teams are just setting themselves up for a postseason run. And whenever you're not just maintaining in the second half of the season, but you're getting better in the second half of this, or tail end of the season, because All-Star is not directly in the middle. But essentially, if you're getting better post-break, you're setting yourself up for success versus those teams that are just limping in or just like staying afloat.
Yeah, I just thought you nailed it. These are teams that got hot late, and they are probably the most dangerous in the playoffs. Here's a good one. That was a really fun, positive one. I'm going to go to the hater parlay one side. I have two playoff teams currently that are bottom four in clutch time net rating for the season. So clutch time, if you're not familiar, is defined as less than 5 minutes in the game, and there's a 5 points differential between your score and the opponent's score. So it has to be end of the game and the score has to be close. Two playoff teams are in the bottom four. These teams are the Minnesota Timberwolves at a negative 14 net rating in the clutch, and this one's crazy, the Miami Heat at negative 13.5 net rating. D, is this anything?
No.
Not at all.
The reason why I say that is not because of the two teams, Heat and Mavs. I mean, Timberwolves, they're complete opposite sides of the spectrum when it comes to win-loss records and whatnot. But not every game is going to be 5 points or less. Like, I think the Timberwolves are a team where you can get out front and be a front-running team because of their defense. So, like, I'm not stressing about a game that's close for them in the playoffs.
Until it gets close.
But I mean, what I'm saying is, like, the Heat, I'm not going to compare the two with that type of stat. I think this is the same thing when you say things like, you know, teams that are expecting an onside kick recover at 99.9% of the time. Like, yeah, no shit.
Well, what if I told you this?
What if I told you?
This is a red flag to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is everything to me, because we watched the Miami Heat last year put on a miraculous run, go from the 8th seed to the NBA Finals. Why is that? Well, I looked into some of the stats and I said, well, Miami's net rating in the clutches got awful this year and they're not doing too well as a team record wise. What do you think their net rating in the clutch was last year in the league ranked?
Third.
No, they were the best team in the clutch last year at plus 14.7. They're now minus 13.5. To me, I know there's a lot of panelists out there, a lot of analysts on ESPN that are like, watch out for the Miami Heat. They're going to get playoff Jimmy. No, this ain't it this year, guys. They're not that type of team. They're not that type of team that will grind you in the playoffs and win those close possession games. This is a team that actually is the complete opposite. When they're in close games, they just shit themselves. And I think this is everything. I think these are two teams that are going to have very disappointing playoff runs if the Heat make the playoffs at all. Because clutch time is everything in the postseason. Every game is a 5-point game, and you got to be good in those situations.
I feel you, but yeah, I'm gonna go say it's not really that big of a deal.
All right, two more. The best lineup in the NBA, as far as net ratings concerned. Now, I did a minimum of 300 possessions, so I wanted to look for a lineup that has 300 possessions at minimum. What was the lineup in the NBA with that had the most success, highest net rating? Are you ready?
Oh, okay.
Tyrese Maxey, De'Anthony Melton, Nicholas Batum, Tobias Harris, Joel Embiid. Is this anything?
Yes. Because when Embiid is healthy, playing the way he's MVP-like, with a second hitter in Tyrese Maxey, you have a scorer in Tobias Harris. And you have Kelly Oubre Jr., who can be a fourth option, Aaron Gordon. They are a scary team. When healthy, that is the team that everybody was expecting to knock off Boston, if there was a team.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it shows that we kind of forgot about Philly, because when Embiid went out, they struggled mightily. I don't know if Embiid is going to be that same Embiid after that second knee injury against Orlando, but if Embiid is who we thought he is, this team could be very dangerous. One follow-up, is this anything? I also looked at the worst net rating by lineup. I thought this was interesting. The second worst. The worst was the Wizards. So I'm just going to disqualify anything Wizards from anything that's worst. It's the Wizards.
Did they finish worse than the...
They did.
Than the Spurs? They did. No, who had the 30-game losing streak?
The Pistons.
Did they finish worse than the Pistons?
I have no idea. You can look up the record when I give you the stat.
Good.
So same criteria, 300 possessions. I wanted to look at the worst net rating. This was interesting. Second worst. Are you ready? It's a play-in team. And I think this is everything. Second worst lineup in the NBA, minimum 300 possessions. Trae Young, DeJounte Murray, Sadiq Bey, Jalen Johnson, Clint Capella. To me, yeah. Writing is on the wall. This offseason, Trae Young has to go. That's it. His time in Atlanta's done.
Yeah, I thought he was going to get traded at the deadline anyway. I know a lot of people talk about Murray being traded, but I thought there was more value with getting rid of Trae Young. But yeah, I think he's out of there, unfortunately. He did what he could. He brought them to an Eastern Conference final. So, you know, I think his second year in, he just needed more than, at the time, John Collins, because that's all he had, and Bogdanovich. He needed a little bit more help than that.
Yeah, they've had their time to try and make it work. It's not happening. Last one. This is for all my Celtics fans out there. I wanted to understand the Boston Celtics really good. So I said, what are they good at? What are they bad at? I looked at all the statistics. First of all, D, this team's fucking good, man.
Yes, they are.
They are like top of every statistic. So here's some of the stats that they're high at. Defensive rate ranking. 2, offensive ranking, 1, turnover rate, 1, true shooting percentage, 1, opponent field free throw rate, 1, opponent field goal percentage, 2, clutch, I was like, maybe they suck at the clutch. Nope, 4 in the clutch. Well, I know Celtics fans bitch about the rebounding. Maybe they're bad at rebounding. No, 5 in rebounding rate. They across the board, the Boston Celtics are top 5 in every category. It's insane. It's hard to find an argument against them. Here's a couple that I found that they were not as high. The first two are not a big deal. Second chance points, as far as giving opponents second chance points, they're 10. That's still top third in the league. Defensive rebound, 7th. Again, 7th's really good. Here's the two that kind of worry me maybe in a playoff series with the Celtics. 3. Points in the paint, 27th. Free throw, percentage of points coming from free throws for the Celtics, 26. 2-point shot attempts, 30th. They're almost dead last, the Celtics. Points in the paint, almost dead last in 2-point shot attempts, and they're almost dead last in percentage of points coming from free throws. This is a team. Live by the three, die by the three. And God, that scares the hell out of a Celtics fan in the playoffs.
This is 100% something. We saw it in the game that they attempted not a single free throw. Not good by any means. The playoffs are going to slow things down. And when they are not hitting their threes, because they have all season, but when they're not, they have to find a way to get to the bucket, and they do not get to the bucket efficiently. And when they get to the free throw line, Jaylen Brown doesn't finish all that great. You know, Jason Tatum doesn't finish all that great, unfortunately. They have to find ways to stay up on teams, because if it is close, yes, those ugly numbers will wreak their heads out there.
And that is that anything? By the way, this music slaps.
Okay, let's go on.
All right, we'll try to be brief on this one since we're heading close to the end of the show. Greatest rapper of all time tournament. First of all, I want to just thank all you listeners who went on the Twitter, voted in this tournament. Big shout out to you. Let me get you the round of applause because I think you guys deserve it.
Also, shout to the Kimites out there. The first round matchup between Jay-Z and Lil' Kim. The most votes that we had seen throughout the entire tournament. So big shouts to you guys that were the Lil' Kim brigade that helped upset Jay-Z with Lil' Kim. So big shouts to you guys.
Well, we started with 32 rappers, whittled it down one by one, and there could only be one. Should I announce the winner of our greatest rapper of all time tournament?
Drum roll, please.
Changes. Wake up in the morning and I ask myself, is life worth living? Should I blast myself? I'm tired of being poor and even worse, I'm black. My stomach hurts, so I'm looking for a purse to snatch. Cops give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, kill a nigga, he's a hero. Get it back to the kids who the hell cares. One less hungry mouth on the welfare. First ship them, don't let them deal with brothers. Give them guns, step back, watch them kill each other. It's time to fight back, that's what Huey said. Two shots in the dark, now Huey's dead. I got love for my brothers, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. We gotta start making changes. Learn to see me as a brother instead of two distant strangers. And that's how I was supposed to be. How can the devil take a brother if he's close to me? I let it go back to when we played as kids, but then it changed. That's the way it is. Come on, come on.
That is right. You guys voted Tupac Shakur the greatest rapper of all time, taking down Ice Cube in the finals with a heavy margin. I think it was a good champion, a great tournament. D, any parting thoughts?
Honestly, I'm glad that it came down to this matchup because you got the best of both worlds, the raw rapping style of Ice Cube in his heyday, early 90s or late 80s with NWA. And then when he went solo, like his diss track that he had with No Vaseline, just incredible rapper, right? If you want to just define what he does musically. And then you have the lyricist, the storyteller, the guy that could hit, you know, hip hop and R&B, hard rap. He could do gospel music if he wanted to. The guy that embodied how you can be a performer, an entertainer, a rapper, and an actor, everything involved into like just who is considered the best of all time. So big shouts to Tupac. You know, we all know all of his incredible tracks that he has. I'm not disappointed in this. This is very similar to like how we wanted Cops to win last year, you know, and we were just like, it's just not gonna, it doesn't have the heavy hitter against Fresh Prince. Like, as much as we love Bad Boys, as much as we love Ice Cube, right? We love how we rap. It's just not the matchup, right? If somebody knocked off Tupac along the way, then this would have been Ice Cube's to win. He just happened to come up against a juggernaut, and that being Tupac.
And to be fair, the ranking I used, it was the Billboard Top 50 Rappers of All Time. They had their list chronologically in order. I guess not chronologically, because that's time. They had their list ranked from their 1 to 50. Their number one was also Tupac, and I think you guys, the fans, are correct. Tupac, the greatest rapper of all time. D, super fun show. I thought we were efficient. We talked so much basketball. We talked everything today. I had a lot of fun. I want to thank you guys all for watching and joining us live, as always, and those listening on podcast. We really appreciate all y'all. But it is time for us to close out, and let's get to our closing take segment and get the f*** out of here.
The show is coming to an end. But first, it's time to get to anything we've missed. It's closing time. One segment, two takes.
Closing takes. Time for us to do a little ISO ball. Get to do a little free form takes, whatever you want. Pop culture, sports, personal life. I don't give a shit. It's your time to shine. I'm starting today. I had a really fun, it wasn't a fun, it was an interesting thing I saw. D, I see you're already laughing. But I saw a story about the last Clippers game at crypto.com arena. D, Steve Ballmer is an owner, bit of a character, outspoken, passionate about his team. Also seems like maybe a decent, I don't know his non-public side, maybe he's an asshole non-public, but decent owner. Last game for the fans. Every fan in attendance,
I know you're talking about,
got your food and your drink taken care of by Steve Ballmer. Every fan got two food items and one drink item on the house, came out of Steve Ballmer's pocket. I think he forked over about $600,000 to take care of all the fans in attendance. Shout out to you, sir, for giving your fans a first-class experience. I can't think of another owner who would do that for their fans.
I didn't know about that. That's actually pretty dope. So he cashed out, or just, you know, put out the bread twice, because also during the end of the season, Mr. You're saying Zach E can't make the NBA, but apparently Boban Marjanovic can stay in the league. His dumbass missed two free throws in a Clippers game, and because of that, everybody got chicken. So nice. Ballmer not only paying everybody a meal with a drink, he also paid out chicken because somebody missed two free throws. So yes, good stuff for him. I don't know how many, maybe the dude from Dallas, I think he's a cool owner.
Cuban?
Yeah, I think Mark Cuban would probably do something like that, but there aren't very many owners. Unfortunately, they're very selfish. That's just, people stay rich because of that.
To be fair, it ain't really hurting Steve Ballmer. I think he's worth like $100 billion. He makes like...
He wrote it off.
He makes like $200 million on Microsoft's share dividends a year. Like, he is not sweating the cash, but I thought it was just a cool move. He didn't have to do that. And he obviously appreciates his fans and his team. So shout out to him.
Big facts. No, I like that one. I'm going a complete out of left field, and I'm not talking about baseball, but I am talking about right hooks. I don't know if you were able to watch it over the weekend.
I did watch some.
UFC 300. Oh my goodness. I was glued to the iPad. Granted, you know, and put it on the tube, unfortunately, but I was glued to the iPad all the way until like 2 a.m. to watch it. Some incredible fights. Alex Pereira fought Jamel Hill, was able to knock him out, I believe.
Jamel Hill from ESPN?
Yeah, not Jamal Hill. Sorry, Jamal Hill. Bo Nickel choked out Cody Brundage. That was a great one. Aljamain Sterling, another good name that a lot of people know, unanimous decision. But the fight of the century, oh my goodness. Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje, I think it is, or Gaethje. Dude, first round, right before the buzzer goes off, the spinning heel kick to the dude's face cracked his nose, right? Dude's busted open, bloody, all that. It was like UFC personified. It's what we wanted, blood all over the place. Dude was able to finish, right? Went all five rounds. the last 15 seconds of that fight might have been the most, like, it might have been the craziest thing of UFC I've ever seen in my entire life. So this dude, Max Holloway, knows that he's winning, right? He's up in the scorecard, and a knockout will lose him the fight. This motherfucker went to the center of the ring, pointed to the center of the ring, and was like, yo, Justin, let's go. Let's box it out. And these motherfuckers was throwing haymakers. Just legit 10 seconds. Here's a right hook. Here's an uppercut. Here's a right hook. Here's an uppercut. And then Max Holloway hits him with the right hook and sleeps this dude where he falls straight down on his face. Dog, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. For those that haven't seen it, the most entertaining I've ever seen a UFC fight ever be. It was awesome.
Can I give you one better?
Mm.
Did you watch the preliminary fights?
Not all of them, but a few of them.
I can't pronounce the guys' names. Yuri Prajnakaza versus Alexander Roddick. So just to give you some background during this fight, this Roddick guy was working Yuri. He was kicking him in the legs, like beating his ass. So this Yuri guy could barely even move, right? He was losing in the scorecards. You could tell he could not move. He fights southpaw. He had to switch his stance because he couldn't put his weight on his foot because it was so fucked up. This dude's absolute warrior. He goes, I ain't winning this fight going the distance. He just goes at the other guy, this Roddick guy. This Roddick guy is tagging him as he comes in, and Yuri's just eating it and just throwing it back. This man was not taking no for an answer. Basically hobbled around the ring chasing the other man, just like, I'm either getting my ass knocked out this round or I'm winning, and just went for it and won the damn fight. It was the craziest shit I've seen.
UFC 300 knocked it out of the park, as they would say. To me, I didn't see that fight. I'll go watch it after this fight.
Please watch it.
Yeah, dog, that knockout that Holloway had, I was like I could have woken up everybody in the house because of like how, like I was amped. I was. Oh! Like just fucking nuts the way that fight ended. So big shouts to Dana White, put on a great product. Obviously, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm a fan of UFC. I was a big Rampage Jackson guy. That was my dude back in the day. Since he's retired, kind of stayed away from it. Izzy was an okay fighter. I know Anderson Silva was dominant, but like Jones. I can't draw to a name, unfortunately, but that was a great fight. Great card that they put out that weekend.
UFC is good for my betting wallet. I do work on UFC fights.
I'm gonna need your help, just like you need my help with baseball, because I can't win with anything in regarding fucking UFC, unfortunately.
I just take heavy favorites and throw the house at them, baby.
There we go.
All right, D, get us out of here.
All right. We appreciate y'all being here. Let me throw it out here now, letting you know that we will not be live next week, next Tuesday. You'll catch us in 2 weeks. Big shouts to my little one. She's turning 4. So dad is not going to be live. I'm not going to be here like Magic Johnson said. But you can catch the recap from this. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. You can catch us with the relive watch if you want. That would be YouTube, Twitch. You can help your boy DFrizzy_Frizz5. You can find us on Facebook. We also have a website where you can click all the content. And
it's there today.
It is there. That's why I pointed. Is that anything? Yeah, it's our website. Thanks for joining it, Neo says. As we dipping up out of here, man, we really couldn't appreciate you guys anymore, especially when it comes to helping grow this this podcast that we have, this show of just two idiots talking sports on Facebook and on Twitch. Trudeau?
Yeah, by the way, thank you all for downloading. We crossed the 1,000 mark this week.
1K, baby. That's awesome. I knew there was something I wanted to shout out. That's why I went back to it. So good stuff with that. 1,000 hits for it, man. Like, this is just an incredible ride that we've been on the last almost 2 years. But every time that we headed up out of here, please make sure y'all take care of y'all mentals. It's almost the summertime. Please take care of y'all physicals. Make sure y'all take care of y'all chicken. Take care of y'all children. And we'll catch y'all on the rebound.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.